The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Good morning, everyone. It's so nice to join you all and see you all this morning. My name is Joan, and I'm joining you all from New Paltz, New York, about 90 minutes north of the city on the west side of the Hudson River. And it's a sort of gray and chilly, brisk day, an autumn morning that seems, you know, familiar. The sky is like a dome of that sort of silvery gray, no real clouds, no real blue, so to speak, just that kind of covered feeling, like a blanket. And the other night, just a couple of nights ago, as Shoshin Hoshi had shared, it was, you know, fog in the morning, this deep fog. We're kind of in the same area while she's in Mass. I'm in New York, and we have similar sort of ecosystems. But later in the evening, the fog had cleared, and in the sky was the waxing crescent moon. You know, you could see it actually kind of growing. You know, we're about 10 days away from the first fall full moon. But today it's covered up again. So this time of year, autumn is, you know, one of my favorite sort of periods of time in the year, if I'm allowed to have a favorite. And, you know, maybe it comes from a Marie Claire magazine or something where I discovered I am an autumn, and you know, that's my makeup palette and clothing or something. But I really do enjoy this time of year. And while spring kind of is seen as a period of time of growth and renewal and coming to life, I feel fall is that way too, perhaps in a different way. While spring has that sort of yang energy of outdoor activity and doing, the fall, you know, we get to turn the light inward. As we tilt away from the sun, we have to kind of come inside and seek, you know, warmth from something else. And I think it's really woven together for me, and perhaps for some of you as well, with that back to school feeling. Shoshin again had mentioned how she had heard schoolgirls in her talk on Thursday getting off the bus, and just that sound of, you know, kids laughing and talking and going to school. It's for me and my cultural references and where I had grown up, it's, you know, the two are intimately tied together. And perhaps even more so as I have taken a position at Marist College. So for those who don't know, I work as a nurse. And for those who do know, I have not left the little boy I was working with. Fear not, we're still in communication, the two of us. But I have taken this position at Marist in their health services. So alongside the students, I joined, you know, at the end of August, I feel a bit like a freshman, you know, learning all new information, meeting new people, struggling with an EMR, an electronic medical record that, as they often are, is not user-friendly at all. And everyone said, oh, it's going to take you 3 months before you even know what you're doing, you know, with this. So I feel a kinship with these students and an excitement in the possibilities, you know, the taking on of new ideas, the experiencing of things, you know, kind of putting stuff on, trying stuff on, looking at things in a new way. And that really is that academic energy of sucking up, you know, drawing in and learning new things. And it's in some ways, you know, while these students are young and vibrant and, you know, have blood pressures of, you know, 112 over 62 and heart rates of 58. And I'm like, oh my God, they're so healthy and young and vibrant. There's that yin energy, you know, that comes in that of introspection and looking and discovering and finding out who they are. You know, who is this pile of cells and tissues and organs? So here in New Paltz and right across the river on the other side, so to speak, is Poughkeepsie, where Marist is. the leaves are just changing. You know, I'm saying just changing. Some are really kind of well on their way, but we're probably a couple of weeks out before the real fireworks begin, so to speak. And tomorrow at Marist, midterms begin. So the leaves are about halfway there, and the students are about halfway there. It somehow feels appropriate. They're half full of the knowledge of this semester. So as seekers of the way, you know, and I'm assuming that's what we might identify as we've all ended up here on this screen together, we're studying too. You know, there's a taking up that we do as well. And the energy, I think, of academic study and the energy of Zen, you know, study practice, there's a lot of similarities. There's aspects that are the same. You know, it takes dedication, it takes focus, it takes determination, viraya, you know, the paramita of viraya, sort of a strength of, yeah, I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to wake up at 7 and I'm going to get on the cushion by 7:25 and I'm going to sit with the Sangha. There's a, you know, there is a determination to that. And yet they're also sort of different or can be very different. In education, I think, and in the academic world, we're encouraged to put on a backpack and fill it up. You know, let's put on many new ideas. Let's try on new things. You know, load that backpack up to, you know, a back-breaking point. Take extra credits. Graduate early. You know, all of those ideas are kind of part of, you know, the hallmarks of academia. And in Zen practice, we kind of have a different approach, or a radically different approach, maybe, where we say the it of it is beyond letters and beyond the sutras and beyond what you can learn or read. And we encourage you to maybe take that backpack off, you know, and start unpacking it a bit. So, you know, maybe start with the electives, start with the things you put in the backpack, things you chose to put there. You can maybe take those out, you know, when we arrive at Zen practice, and then, you know, maybe look at the core curriculum that was put in the backpack for you. You know, you can maybe take that out too. Maybe, you know, unenroll from some courses altogether. If any Marist students are listening, wash these words from your ears. You know, education is important. It's important that we, you know, try on these ideas and suck these ideas up. But Zen practice asks us also to maybe put them down, you know, just set them down for a second and recognize that, yes, indeed, these are theories, ideas. So there's a story from the 9th century in China that probably illuminates this better than I can. So I will share it with you. And it is the story of yet to be Zen master Deshan, but at the time scholar Deshan Xuanzang. And he was a notorious student of the Diamond Sutra. He was sort of an expert on it. And in his backpack, he carried around his notes and his footnotes and his commentaries and his translations and all of his writings and everyone else's writings on the Diamond Sutra. So in his heavy backpack that he had on his back, he would travel about, and he came upon an old lady at the side of the road in his travels who was selling tea and rice cakes. And so I think when he met this old lady, he probably saw in her something. You know, he knew there was something there that maybe he needed to find out about. You know, he didn't just say, hey, can I buy some rice cakes and get a cup of tea? His first words to her were, who are you? You know, very Zen question. So I think he knew there was something there. And she, of course, said, I'm just an old lady selling tea and rice cakes by the side of the road. And so he said, okay, you know, then I'd like to buy some tea and get a cake. And she said, sure, of course, I'll give that to you. But first, you need to answer some questions for me. What is it you have in your backpack? And he said, oh, I have all my notes and commentaries and letters and translations of the Diamond Sutra. I imagine there was, you know, probably an identity attached to those notes and letters and work that he had done. And she said, oh, that's amazing. So yes, I'll sell you some cake. But first, let me ask you this. In the Diamond Sutra, it says that the past mind is ungraspable, present mind is ungraspable, and future mind is ungraspable. So what mind is it you wish to refresh with my tea and cakes? And Daishan was stumped. He didn't know. And then this little old lady did the most compassionate thing that she could have possibly done. She sent him off hungry and thirsty, sent him on his way. She was extremely grandmotherly because I think she gave him a business card or a referral to, you know, the monastery down the road, his Zen master, where he then studied and got some clarity. And that's not to say that everything he had absorbed that he carried in his backpack is bad. Yeah, he burned all of the writings the next day, as the story goes, but it's not to say that he put them down entirely. You know, he had that knowledge, but it took this little old lady to take away from him what was propping him up so that he could actually see. So extremely compassionate action on her part. So in the spring here, and probably where you are, you know, things start to bud and they come out of the ground. And at first they start, you know, that light and fragile green, you know, and then they become these chlorophyll factories, you know, and they start to stretch their leaves out and, you know, reach out to get that photosynthesis cooking, you know, and the whole planet becomes this thing, you know, a photosynthesis chlorophyll factory. And from that, there are things that are incredibly nourishing, leaves that we actually eat and fruits and vegetables, you know, that become are from those leaves and this photosynthesis factory. So the taking on of information isn't a bad thing at all. You know, and I think of Daishan and I think of the Marist students, you know, at midterms now who are very likely sitting in some library trying mnemonics and cramming information into their head for the midterm, you know, tomorrow. It's not a bad thing at all. Vital for our growth. And yet we have to study the self, you know, that's part of it. I think, you know, Dogen didn't say, you know, to study the way is to forget the self and be illuminated by the myriad things. He said to study the way is to study the self and then forget the self and be illuminated by the myriad things. So, you know, these students and us in our studying in this way really are studying the self in an ability to remember to forget it as well. So I think the gathering up of ideas is important, but for us in Zen, you know, it's just as, and maybe even a little more important to put them down as well. And, you know, when we put them down, like Suzuki Roshi said, we, you know, avail ourselves of that beginner's mind. You know, we let go of our reflexive mind that knows the answer, and we get to open up a bit. So I've shared this before, and I will share it again, I'm sure. But as these leaves change, I'm reminded they're not so much changing as they're revealing their true colors. So as we tilt away from the sun, you know, the deep reds and goldens and browns, you know, and burgundies come out because the chlorophyll factory has stopped a bit. You know, we're not getting as much sunlight, you know, so can we put down our chlorophyll factory a bit, I guess is what I'm asking, and allow for our true colors, you know, the goldens and reds and browns and burgundies to come forth. I think our Zazen allows for that to happen. You know, I think that's how we do it. You know, it allows for that to sort of step away a bit and for our true nature to be revealed, because the leaves aren't green. They've become green by what they've, you know, added to themselves. And very important that they did that. So as we tilt away, you know, from the sun in this fall. Oh, hi, Ruby. Have you come to join the talk? As we tilt away from the sun, you know, what can we put down? what has our factories been creating, you know, producing that perhaps, you know, was important at the time, but now we can let something else come forward. I think the trees are starting their session. That's how I sometimes think of it. You know, they stop, you know, the grasping for energy and information from here, and they, you know, sit down and they really get into their roots. And in so doing, you know, let the leaves drop away, maybe. They can, you know, let a few things fall away. And in the falling away, start to see, really, you know, the mountains past us. You know, when the leaves fall away here in my front yard, I get to see the Shangunk Ridge, you know, that runs through New Paltz, famous for climbing. There might be a couple people online right now who are climbing that very ridge, and I can see it much more clearly. So I think it might be wise to take a cue from the trees and put down some of what, you know, we often go to, put down some of what props us up. Not to say that it's bad, but allow it to go down. I think of my garden, you know, we've pickled and jarred things and frozen things. So it's not to say it's bad, but maybe we can put it in the freezer, or, you know, put a little vinegar on it and stick it in a jar and let it set to the side for a second and allow for true nature to come forward. And it won't be long before all these leaves have fallen anyway, and it's time for our winter ongo and a time to really look deeper still, if you will. And we'll have many opportunities between now and then and at the time of winter ongo to pick up ideas and put ideas down over and over again, and many chances to have our mind refreshed, I'm sure, by the tea and cakes that are offered regularly here. So I'm going to leave you with a poem that I think speaks to this a bit, from Hanshan, Cold Mountain. And Hanshan was a little bit before Daishan and the Old Woman, but a Chinese poet as well. And what little I know of him is from the Red Pine translation, Cold Mountain, his mountain. His name means Cold Mountain. And I will read you this. Sitting alone in peace before these cliffs. Sitting alone in peace before these cliffs, the full moon is heaven's beacon. The 10,000 things are all reflections. The moon originally has no light. Wide open, the spirit of itself is pure. Hold fast to the void. Realize its subtle mystery. Look at the moon like this. This moon that is the heart's pivot.